Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, Libby Emmons joins us from the Postmillennial and Human Events to talk about the trans issue, and also Ben Weingarten from Real Clear Investigations to talk about a new threat to our children. You can add it to the list. Email us directly, freedom@charliekirk.com. Subscribe to the Charlie Kirk Show podcast. Open up your podcast app and type in Charlie Kirk Show and get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by my friends Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage, 888-888-1172 or andrewandtodd.com. Welcome back. Email us freedom@charliekirk.com and subscribe to the Charlie Kirk Show podcast. With us now is Ben Weingarten from Real Clear Investigations. It's a very important story. You're not going to hear it anybody else. And it's seemingly innocuous, seemingly very below the radar and just kind of boring. But no, this is important. Ben Weingarten has revealed, and he's reporting, that there is a rise of taxpayer-funded media literacy education. It is an effort through K through 12 education to teach young people on what media sources to trust and not trust. And Ben joins us now. Ben, tell us about this.
Well, thanks for having me, Charlie. And, you know, to set the context for this, as we've talked about before, there's a war on wrongthink that's gone on in this country. And we've seen a mass public-private sector censorship regime imposed upon us under the guise of protecting health and public safety. And so that's extended from the national security apparatus and the public health authorities to big tech companies, corporate media, and beyond. And in media literacy, among folks whom I interviewed and based upon my examination of relevant materials, documents, and the groups behind the media literacy push, it should certainly be seen at very minimum as part and parcel responsive to this moral panic over mis, dis, and malinformation as the powers that be define it. And it's being embedded within schools across the country through growing legislation and oftentimes more and more robust legislation. I talk about in this article, in particular, New Jersey, which is mandating media literacy education in its K through 12 curriculum. And media literacy education is defined as...
so Orwellian. Keep going.
It's defined in the most vague and innocuous, as you noted, anodyne, neutral, apolitical kind of terms. Basically, it's you should be able to discern fact from fiction as a student, and media literacy education is going to give you the critical thinking tools to determine the veracity of information and the credibility of the sources behind it. And those who are the biggest purveyors of this, promoters of this, will tell you this isn't about teaching you what to think. It's about teaching students how to think. And it's imperative for our democracy, for students to have these skills. So set aside for a moment the fact that we know that this has been used, this kind of rhetoric has been used as a Trojan horse for suppressing and censoring ideas that the authorities don't like and promoting the ideas that they do like. When you actually dig into the groups behind media literacy, what you find is that within media literacy, there's a subspecialty called critical media literacy. And it is a Marxian lens, just like critical race theory, through which to deconstruct the media, which means looking at every story through the prism of race, sex, class, equity, et cetera. One of the biggest organizations behind media literacy education, which is funded, including by the federal government, but also big tech companies and corporate media and the like, they actually did an entire annual conference in 2021 devoted to media literacy and social justice. And so it's baked right in. If you look at the materials that are produced by promoters of media literacy education, some of it is you know, ask basic questions about who is this source? Who funds this source? Who's being interviewed in connection with the story? Obviously, things that you should do if you're critically examining anything that's put out, because everything has a message and there's always a voice behind that message. However, then when you get into what are the actual sources, reference materials that they promote, it's sources like from Howard Zinn's, the Howard Zinn Project. It's sources from PBS around ways to understand the insurrection, quote unquote. It is math through a social justice prism. So this looks like it's presented as civics education. Know how to understand these sources, and you'll be a better citizen as a consequence of understanding how to break down the media. But in practice, it seems to slant in one direction. And as I noted, it's increasingly being embraced in states across the country. It's being promoted by the federal government and in federal legislation. And the most Orwellian and potentially disturbing part of this, which we've discussed before, is that the national security apparatus itself has baked media literacy into the Biden administration's national strategy for countering domestic terrorism, which essentially equates wrongthink with a danger to the homeland. And that is the context that's so critical for understanding anything that's promoted by authorities around combating mis, dis, and malinformation.
Well, there's a lot there to unpack. I'm curious, before we go any further, how did you find out about this? How was this a tip or a lead? Because this is awfully orchestrated. It's multi-states. It seems as if it's centralized. What led you to report on this?
Yeah, so there was a big civics bill, federal civics bill presented as such, that was put forth a year or two ago. It's been reintroduced, as well as a proposed regulation put forth by the Biden Education Department. And when you actually started to peel back the layers on civics education, it also looked like a Trojan horse for left-wing indoctrination. And always embedded in these civics bills were these lines about the importance of media literacy. Fast forward to this year, and just after the dawn of the new year, New Jersey passed this legislation, which was touted as, and the governor signed into law this legislation, touted as the most expansive media literacy education bill in the country. And the rhetoric around that bill got me interested in the story. This was a bill that was passed with broad bipartisan support, including by senators, the people in New Jersey, state senators, the people in New Jersey consider to be pretty conservative. And the state senators were saying, this is an anodyne bill. It's bipartisan. It's apolitical. It's about having a smart and independent, you know, discerning mm-hmm. consumers of news with K through 12 students. But 2 days after that bill was passed, January 6, 2023, Governor Murphy came out and he touted this bill in context of combating essentially future violent insurrections, in his words, that this was about defending our democracy. The not so veiled link being that if you hold the wrong ideas, that might make you a domestic terrorist or liable to be a domestic terrorist down the road. And so that got me down the rabbit hole of what is media literacy education? Why would Governor Murphy in New Jersey be talking about it, and what other states and other authorities are looking into it? And I found out that even NATO is funding these massive white papers around media literacy as imperative to defending the transatlantic alliance.
Well, the trans and something. So I don't know what the transatlantic alliance, but yeah, keep going.
Right. So you see, you start to view it in context of this broader moral panic that I would argue over mis, dis, and malinformation. And then all the ways that manifests itself as a pretext towards censoring, moderating, so-called regulating wrongthink. And so even with the best intentions and even with the most neutral language, is setting aside that obviously public school teachers skew overwhelmingly left, the librarian organizations who are behind this might skew even more left than the members of the teachers unions that are so powerful in many of these states. You have to view it in this broader context of mis, dis, and malinformation, combating it, and the way that has been used to eviscerate our most fundamental liberties. And so that got me really attuned to this, put it on my radar, and I thought it was worth reporting on because mm-hmm. there's so much focus on these various aspects of schools as indoctrination centers. New Jersey in particular, as you would imagine, is a progressive state, you know, has incorporated environmentalist kind of education, gender ideology in the classrooms, and of course, was very draconian with its coronavirus-related policies. And these very same people are the ones touting combating mis, dis, and malinformation. And so I think that should, you know, spark the radars of everyone across the country, particularly because these bills are passing in red states and blue states and being proposed in state legislators across the country at an increasing rate since 2016, of course, when Donald Trump rose and was elected.
This is just it. You think you have all the different threats identified to our republic, and then we have you come on our show. You're like, no, actually, there's this incredibly well-funded international effort on a very specific issue that's in, you just add it to the list, right? Oh, okay. So not only do we have critical race theory, open borders, tech censorship, trans stuff, outright anti-Christian behavior, but just add it to the list. I want to talk about ReliefFactor.com. I want you guys to check out ReliefFactor.com, 100% drug-free, knee pain, back pain, joint pain, elbow pain. Check out Relief Factor Energy. Help makes your body make nutrients readily available. Relief Factor Sleep. I know a lot of you are probably having trouble sleeping. Relief Factor Sleep could be the best solution for you. Everybody goes to bed. Not everybody sleeps. We're all about helping people live lives that are filled with connection, exploration, passion, and emotion. That is what his life is all about. Make sure you guys are sleeping well. It's a major part of life. Check it out right now. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. So I'm curious, often I'm confronted by sometimes donors and they say, Charlie, we need to bring civics back into education. Ben, sometimes is it Republicans pushing for that? That actually is not a good idea is what you're saying. No, you're saying, wait, hold on. If you're going to agree with civics, you actually might get critical race theory Marxist civics, right?
Yeah, you know, this is how the left works when they take over institutions. And let's note that, of course, of all the institutions for the future, obviously, the public schools are probably the most imperative of them all, which is why, you know, you noted before the break, we have myriad threats and we're fighting, you know, a 1,000-front war, if not a 10,000-front war. But the schools are obviously ground zero. One of the reasons, by the way, that I think the Biden administration went out and labeled critical parents domestic terrorists and sicked counterterrorism authorities on them precisely to chill that opposition, because this is the key point. This is ground zero. This is the core nerve center for perpetuating the regime's ideology and then ultimately its power. So yes, civics, of course. Well, everyone likes the concept of civics. Everyone believes that schools should be about preparing citizens to ultimately go out and contribute to their country. Obviously, the left has a very different view of what that should look like. And they've actually pioneered a concept called action civics. And action civics, of which media literacy is a part because it's geared at the end of the day towards quote unquote democratic action. What action civics is about is ultimately shown to be agitation, protesting, social justice activism, and the like. So it's looking at American history, our Constitution, our core documents, our entire Republican system through the favored lens of the left. But obviously, because it has civics in the name and it's pushed as educating citizens so they can be productive members of our democracy, that's used as a wedge, as a Trojan horse. And again, media literacy oftentimes falls as a subcategory, a bucket beneath these sorts of civics bills. And I'd urge everyone, check out Stanley Kurtz's writings on this, because he's done deep dives on these otherwise very dry and dense materials, which show themselves to be thinly veiled, essentially CRT-focused guidebooks under the guise of preparing for a vibrant citizenry.
Based on your research, how many Republicans are going along with this? I mean, is it finally waking up? Because I know a lot of Republican donors, efforts that have given millions of dollars to try to get civics in our schools, and they've probably just been funding hatred of America.
We'll put it this way. In Texas, there was a huge high-profile battle over civics legislation that was considered there. And while the worst parts of it from the perspective of progressive indoctrination were ultimately carved out of it, the fact that there was such a huge battle in a place like Texas, I think, is illustrative of the fact that it's very easy for people, including well-intentioned Republicans and even conservatives, to be hoodwinked by this and to not look into the materials that are actually being advocated for in connection with civics, the group and the groups behind those materials as well. And so it's incumbent upon Republican lawmakers, when they hear civics as a buzzword being brought up in legislation, to know that that can be used as a Trojan horse. And like everything else with the progressive left, whatever the stated intent of it is, whatever the title of the bill is, usually it actually means the opposite. But take, for example, this, the notion of a TikTok ban, for example, which has been bandied about, but which we know when you actually go into the legislation, well, this is actually about far more than TikTok. And you know that this could be used and weaponized against nearly anyone under the sun. And what happens when the government says, well, you take the wrong line on a particular national security or foreign policy issue, you're an agent of the Russians or the Chinese, et cetera. And then they use that as a pretext to go after moderating so-called your speech here. Mm-hmm. There are analogs to be found in every single one of these areas. And it shows you the battle when you have every institution that's controlled by people who fundamentally want to change the country and eviscerate and
these
completely alienate and marginalize
these people are revolutionaries. They do not stop. And Ben, I'm glad you exposed it, but I'll just reinforce what I said earlier. You know, you think you have every single threat identified, right? The Chinese Communist Party, lockdowns, vaccine, debt deficit, inflation, the stupid war that we're involved in Eastern Ukraine. And you go, actually, no, there's also a very strategic effort to teach your kids how to watch the news through a Marxist lens. Ben, great job. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Charlie.
I want to tell you guys about my friends, Andrew and Todd. I've actually been working with Todd on a project here, something that we're trying to get done. And he's so responsive. He's so amazing. Everybody I refer to Andrew and Todd for mortgage needs, they are overwhelmingly happy. Look, dealing with most banks is a total pain. I can tell you from experience, I am not a fan when you have to fill out all those mortgage documents. It is a pain. Andrew and Todd make it personal, fun. They love the Lord. They're patriots. They're lighthearted. They're whimsical. I really enjoy working with them. And I can say from personal experience, I have gone through the process with them and they are fabulous. So look, if you're knowing somebody to relocate, upsize, downsize your current home, and look, it might almost be a buyer's market. Yes, I know interest rates are high. You could refinance in the future. But look at some of these prices. You could get a bargain. For those of you that are the Zillow hunters out there that are constantly saving things in your Zillow profile, I'm not telling you to buy, but I'm seeing a 20% price reduction in certain neighborhoods, 15% price reduction, 10% price reduction. It might get to the place where all of a sudden you're like, hey, I got to move my family into a home. We got to stop renting. We want to own. I know interest rates are high, but you can always refinance. And in fact, ask Andrew and Todd about trying to avoid a prepayment penalty, which means there's no downside, except that you might have a high interest rate for a short period of time. But that's not an excuse not to get into the market as prices are falling. If it's right for you, and if you're doing something else, by the way, if you're relocating, upsizing, downsizing, taking equity out of your home, they have the answers. You go to andrewandtodd.com. They're your loan problem solvers and solution providers with decades of experience to know how to create the perfect plan for you. And I'll be very honest. I once did a mortgage with one of the big, bad, woke banks. I'm never doing that again. Stop doing mortgage business with people who hate you. I went through that whole thing. It's a disaster. It's a catastrophe. I don't like it. I know you don't either. So if you have any mortgage needs, make a promise to yourself that you're going to use a mortgage company with somebody who sees the world the way you do. They share your values. They have a worldview that is consistent. They love America. They're not woke. They don't believe any of that crap. So go to andrewandtodd.com and fill out the quick form. Call them at 888-888-1172. That's andrewandtodd.com, 888-888-1172. When I was working with them on a project and trying to get something done, they text you back almost immediately. How many bankers, when you deal with something, are actually able to text you on the weekends, at nights? Personal touch is everything, and they're great people. andrewandtodd.com. Check it out, andrewandtodd.com. Joining us now is Libby Evans, Human Events and the Post-Millennial. She's one of the clearest thinkers on the trans issue. Libby, welcome back to the program. What a terrible couple days, and what a disappointing news cycle that has followed of sensitivity to pronouns and trans people, but not to dead children. Libby, before we dive into it, just the floor is yours, your thoughts, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, I was as stunned as you were, Charlie, when I saw on Monday that there was another school shooting. And it was even more shocking to see that it was carried out this time by a young woman. And that it turns out that that young woman actually believed that she was a male and used pronouns that were male pronouns. It was really a surprise to see that. And in the days that followed, in the hours that followed, even more surprising and horrifying to, well, perhaps not more horrifying, but pretty surprising was that mainstream media outlets started advocating for the use of these he, him pronouns. And we're prioritizing the use of pronouns over discussing the, you know, victims and the children that were killed and things like that. So it was pretty surprising. Also, then we saw on Twitter started banning people mm-hmm. who were talking about this other thing, which is upcoming on Saturday in Washington, D.C. Several networks, some of them Antifa affiliated, all of them trans advocacy groups, are organizing what they are calling a trans day of vengeance outside of the Supreme Court. And what is this even about? They're talking about bringing buddies wearing masks as though they think it's still the summer of 2020 out there. And they're still going ahead with this despite the shooting. And the other thing too, as I was looking into this morning, this day of vengeance, which actually the Post Millennials Twitter account was locked yesterday for reporting on this. Our senior editor, Andy Ngo, his Twitter account also locked for reporting on this, as was that of Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, her Twitter account locked, temporarily suspended, simply for reporting that this is happening. And if you go to the website for Trans Action Network, you can see that they're still fully advocating for this day to go forward. You can see that there's t-shirts that have, you know, rifles on them that say, you know, trans day of vengeance and all of these kinds of things. It's pretty surprising to see where we're headed as a society when, these people who advocate for child sex changes mm-hmm. can have impunity on social media for planning violent demonstrations in our nation's capital.
So I want to play a piece of tape here. I want to go to this one. These are bloodthirsty people, some of them. The trans world is full of some of the most violent, vile, nasty people. They totally get away with it, incredibly radical. And then I'd say every person who thinks they are a different sex suffers from this, but this community has a violent undercurrent that is very, very scary. Don't believe me? Watch this one. Play cut 74.
And people like J.K. Rowling need to stop because my people are dying because of her. She is killing us. Oh, but there's one more good thing about this book. J.K. Rowling dies. Yeah, Gretchen had the nerve to kill off the queen of the TERFs, and it is glorious. I only wish that scene could have been even more brutal.
More brutal, fantasizing the death and the slaughter of J.K. Rowling. I'm going to play another piece of tape here. This is some trans activist. The video goes on for a while, calling for the death, the beating, and the slaughter of police officers and people they disagree with. Play cut 73.
Trans people in Tennessee, it's time to fight. You're going to die anyways. We're going to die anyways. It's time to exist. Fight them. Hurt them. Carry a weapon at all times. And yes, you have to attack the police officer. And if they lock you in prison, fuck up the guards. I'll tell you something. If a police officer put his hands on me for trying to be who I am, I don't care if I got shot. I'm taking a couple of transphobes with me. And I suggest you do the same. The time for debate is over. It's a waste of time.
Human Events article, the trans vengeance movement has led to a series of assaults and now the murder of Christian children. Libby, your thoughts?
I thought that person was very scary, and I certainly hope to never encounter someone like that walking down the street. You know, as a woman, I find violent men in dresses to be frightening and disturbing. So we see this trans vengeance movement. We see it heading along into the weekend, and we see them being upheld by mainstream media outlets, the New York Times, USA Today, both dealing with the whole pronoun thing instead. And what I find really amazing also is that this trans day of vengeance is being organized on the basis that there is a huge amount of hate directed at trans people and that there is some sort of trans genocide going on. The fact of the matter is that there is not a trans genocide going on at all. If you look at the numbers of people who have died violently, who are transgender, it is a very small number of people. Last year, it was under 40 people. The year before, it was also under 40 people. There's no genocide. And for the most part, when you look up the names of the individuals who are trans, who were victims of homicide, which of course is a terrible thing for them, obviously, and for their families. But when you look up their names, you are not seeing hate crimes charges. You are not seeing hate crimes allegations. You are seeing issues of drug deals gone bad. You are seeing issues involving sex work. You are seeing domestic violence, domestic partner violence, and this sort of thing is what is going on. There are not roving gangs of genocidal maniacs going around killing men who are wearing dresses or women who, you know, pretend that they're men. That's just not happening in this country. And a lot of the ideas that there was a trans genocide came from a report out of Brazil a few years ago, where sex workers who are men who identify as women or dress as women or what have you were being killed in Brazil, not in the US. So these numbers are just entirely fabricated in order to uphold this horrifying ideology. And also, when you look at what they're talking about when they say that there is hate directed at trans people, they specifically call out legislation that is either newly on the books or being proposed in many states across the country. And this legislation is opposed to child sex changes. So you have people saying that we hate them because we do not want our children to be medically mutilated in service to a lie. Does that make sense at all? What, that's not hate. That is wanting children to grow up whole and healthy. And somehow that has been transmogrified into hate by these people who are, you know, taking an awful lot of cross-sex hormones, which I can't imagine is good for the brain.
Yeah, I mean, so that, let's talk about that. These are people that are already unstable, and that's a fact. And we're making them more unstable by pumping them with testosterone replacement therapy and in some cases Lupron. And I mean, it depends on what side they're going to, right?
What you're going, yeah. And there's estrogen.
Both are bad, right? Mm-hmm. And by the way, it screws up your body's own ability to regulate your hormones, can make you hyper-aggressive, it can make you very depressed. And then these doctors, who really aren't doctors, they're butchers, then they'll just say, oh, just take some benzos or take some Zoloft or take some Xanax as just a way to cover up for it. And then they might gain a bunch of weight and they got to get on some other drug for that.
Ozempic.
Yeah, Ozempic. Yeah, which
is. Isn't that the new one? Yeah.
And so then it creates this cascade of interventions and maybe even violence. Is that fair to talk about, Libby?
I think that is fair to talk about. And we have seen reporting over the last year, even coming out of the New York Times, about the unhealthy cocktails of drugs. Antipsychotic drugs and antidepressants and all of these things that are being described to children and teenagers. They are being prescribed off-label, they're not recommended by the FDA for these purposes. And children are being prescribed these. We've seen a lot of the children that are being prescribed these massive cocktails of drugs are young boys in foster care. They're trying to control these kids. They're giving them lots of drugs. And now we have children who are taking puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones. A lot of these kids also are dealing with other mental and emotional issues. The young woman who was killed on Monday after taking the lives of three people at the school that she once attended was also reportedly dealing with emotional distress, was being treated for that, was also reportedly high-functioning autistic and was dealing with that. And then on top of that, had this other thing going on. There has not been any conclusive report that she was taking cross-sex hormones. But, you know, that's certainly a possibility and it's unclear if that's what was going on. But clearly she had other issues as well.
Libby, tell us about some of the other violence that has been occurring? There's been so much.
There has been a lot under the guise that it is hate to protect children from child sex changes, or hate to say that women's sports should be for women only, or hate to say that women should have sex segregated bathrooms. There has been an outstanding amount of violence committed by trans advocates. Now, these people do not represent the entire, community of people who have alternative sexual identities, or people who, identify as the opposite sex from what they actually are. But they are an incredibly vocal majority amount of people. I don't know if it is necessarily the majority. We'd have to check that out. But there has been a lot of violence. Kelly J. Keene, who also goes by Posey Parker, was doing a Let Women Speak tour. She's done this in the UK and the US. She was in Australia and she was in New Zealand. There was some violence at the Melbourne event when a trans-identified male stormed stage, grabbed the microphone, pushed women aside, and was taken down by two very large, burly security guards. But when Keane went to New Zealand, things really heated up. There was a petition prior to her arrival in the country suggesting that she not be allowed into the country at all. And her tour, what she does is she tells local women, hey, why don't you come speak up about this? It's easier to do this in numbers. And so local women showed up to speak in New Zealand as well. And there was an elderly woman who was headbutted and punched by a man. There was a mom who was there with her 10-year-old daughter, and she reported that a man came up to them, lifted up his shirt, and started fingering his nipples, demanding that they recognize his breasts. So that was one thing that happened. This mom and 10-year-old were also surrounded by activists, and they feared for their safety. When Kelly J. Keene showed up herself, she ended up being doused with tomato juice. She was terrified for her life, and she was escorted out of the area directly to the airport. This all because she was speaking up for the rights of women and girls to have their own sex segregated spaces where they can be free from interference by men who may be predators. That's suddenly unreasonable. You gave a talk at UC Davis,
yep.
And we saw that activists showed up there. They were very violent. They broke windows. They assumed that because you speak out against child sex changes, and we need to be very clear that that's what this is, child sex changes. The idea that a child can change sex or that this should be advocated for is, of course, absolutely absurd. Yet there they were believing that you were in some way violent yourself because you are in favor of children not transitioning to the opposite sex. So we saw that. We've seen leaders of universities come out and say that anyone who opposes child sex changes is in some way violent themselves, when really the violation is against children, it's against nature, and it's against humanity and our future.
And so final question, Libby, why are so many women going along with this? We ask the question all the time, where are the feminists? Any update there? We found them yet?
Yeah, no. I think that it's important to remember, and as someone who has identified in the past as a feminist, as someone who believes in women's equal rights, which we, of course, have in this country, which exist in the UK and Australia and New Zealand. But looking around, I do think it's important to remember that it's very easy for men to push women around. This happens all the time.
Kidding. That's the trans movement, though.
That's the trans movement.
That's what's so bizarre about all of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the same old misogyny, only now it's dressed up in heels and little dresses, and men fingering their nipples, demanding that we call them breasts. I wonder where the women are. Even more, though, I wonder where the men are. Why aren't there more men speaking up for women? Why aren't there more men speaking up for children? Why aren't there more men saying,
yeah, I agree,
this is not right? And the men who do speak up for it are vilified not only by trans activists, but by women who call themselves feminists and claim to be speaking up for women's rights.
I got destroyed for even asking the question, Libby, of where the men are. Can't say that. You just have to kind of just remain beta and subservient. Libby, thank you so much. Check out Human Events and also The Postmillennial. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.